eyelids gave him back a bruised, deep green gaze, and he opened his eyes again.
"Forget her," said the bear. "Forget the witch. You are going to drive yourself mad with lust and pride and regret."
That was too close to the bone. Constantine sat up and said,
"You cannot read my mind."
"No," the bear retorted, "but I can read your face, which is much the same thing." Constantine subsided into the rough blankets. Softly he said,
"I thought I'd be satisfied." "It is not your nature to be satisfied," said the bear. "The princess of Sierpukhov wasn't at the cathedral today," said Constantine, "nor her household."
"That would be because of the child," said the bear.
"Maria? What about her?"
"Warned," said the bear. "The Cherti warned her. Did you think you killed all the witches in Moscow when you burned the one? But never fear. There will be no more witches in Moscow before the first snow."
"No?" Constantine breathed. "How?"
"Because you brought all Moscow to the cathedral today," said the bear with satisfaction.
"I needed an army."
"They mustn't go,"
Maria had cried to her mother.
"No one."
Daughter and mother each wore the thinnest of shifts, sweat dewing their faces, identical dark eyes glassy with weariness. In the Tierem that summer, all the women lived in twilight. There were no fires lit indoors, no lamps or candles. The heat would have been unbearable. They opened the windows at night, but fastened them all tightly by day, to keep in what coolness they could. So the women lived in gray darkness, and it told on all of them. Maria was pallid under her sweat, thin and drooping. Gently, Olga said to her daughter,
"If folk wish to go pray at the cathedral, I can hardly prevent them."
"You have to," said Maria urgently. "You have to. The man in the oven said, he said that people will come away sick."
Olga considered her daughter, frowning. Maria hadn't been herself since the heat gripped them. Ordinarily, Olga would have taken her family out of the city, to the rough-built town of Sierpukhov proper, where they could at least hope for some quiet and cooler air. But this year, there were reports of fires to the south, and if anyone so much as put a nose out of doors, they saw a hellish white haze and breathed the smoke. Now there was plague in the posad outside the walls, and that settled it. She would keep her family where it was. But,
"Please," said Maria, "everyone has to stay here with our gates shut."
Olga was still frowning.
"I cannot keep our gates shut forever."
"You won't have to," said Maria,
and Olga noticed uneasily the directness of her daughter's gaze. She was growing up too quickly. Something about the fire and its aftermath had changed her. She saw things her mother did not.
"Just until Vasya gets back."
"Masha," Olga began gently.
"She is coming back,"
said her daughter. She did not shout it defiantly, did not weep or plead with her mother to understand. She just said it.
"I know it."
"Vasya wouldn't dare," said Varvara,
coming in with damp cloths, a jar of wine that had been packed in straw in the cool cellar.
"Even assuming she lives still, she knows what a risk it would be to all of us."
She handed the cloth to Olga, who dabbed her temples.
"Has that ever stopped Vasya?" Olga asked, taking the cup that Varvara gave her.
The two women exchanged worried glances.
"I will keep the servants from the cathedral, Masha," Olga said, "though they will not thank me for it. And if you hear that Vasya has come, will you tell me?"
"Of course," said Maria at once. "We must have supper ready for her."
Varvara said to Olga,
"I do not think she will come back. She has gone too far."
Chapter 20. The Golden Bridle.
Vasya's head was full of winter midnights, and she was shaking with a want of light. She wasn't sure they would ever come out at all. They rode without pause, over ridges and valleys glazed with ice, filled up with darkness as if they'd never seen day. Morozko's presence at her back was no comfort here. He was a part of the long, lonely night, untroubled by the frost. She tried to think of Sasha, to think of Moscow and daylight and her own life, waiting for her on the other side of the darkness. But the touchstones of her life had all been thrown into disarray, and it grew harder and harder to focus her mind as they rode through the icy night. "Stay awake," Morozko said in her ear. Her head was lolling on his shoulder. She jerked upright, half in a panic, so that the white mare slanted a reproving ear. "If I guide us, we will end somewhere on my own lands, in the deep of winter," he continued. "If you still want to make it to Moscow in summer, you must stay awake." They were crossing a glade full of snowdrops, stars overhead, and the faint sweetness of the flowers at her feet. Hastily, Vasya straightened her back, tried to refocus her mind. The darkness seemed to mock her. How could you separate the Winter King from winter? Impossible even to try. Her head swam. "Vasya," he said more gently, "come with me to my own lands. Winter will come soon enough to Moscow. Otherwise..." "I am not asleep yet," she said, suddenly fierce. "You set the bear free. You must help me bind him." "With pleasure." "In winter," he said. "It is only a breath of time, Vasya. What are two seasons?"
"Little to you, perhaps, but a great deal for me and mine," she said.
He did not argue again. She was thinking of that forgetfulness, the strange slip of reality that made fire from nothing, or kept the eyes of all Moscow from seeing her. Impossible that the Winter King should walk abroad in summer. Impossible. Impossible. She clenched her fists.
"No," she thought, "it isn't."
"A little farther," she said, and wordless, the white mare cantered on. At last, when Vasya's concentration was wavering like a flame in a high wind, when exhaustion ate at her, and his arm about her waist was the only thing keeping her upright, the cold grew a little less fierce. Then mud showed under the snow. Then they were in a world of rustling leaves. The white mare's hooves rimed the leaves with frost where they fell, and still Vasya hung on. Finally, she and Morozko and the two horses stepped between one night and the next, and she saw a campfire nestled in the bend of a river. In the same instant, the full weight of summer's heat fell on her body like a hand, and the last trace of winter fell away behind them. Morozko sagged weightless against her back. She was alarmed to see his hand growing fainter and fainter, as frost dissolves at the touch of warm water. Vasya half-turned and caught hold of his hands.
"Look at me," she snapped. "Look at me!"
He raised absolutely colorless eyes to hers, set in a face equally colorless, without depth, the way light flattens in a snowstorm.
"You promised not to leave me," Vasya said. "You are not alone," you said. "Are you so easily forsworn, Winter King?"
Her hands crushed his. He straightened up. He was still there, though faint.
"I am here," he said, and the ice of his breathing stirred, impossibly, the leaves of a summertime wood.
A note of wry humor entered his voice, more or less, but he was shaking.
"You are back in your own midnight now," Pushar informed them. "Indifferent to impossibilities, I am going. My debt is paid."
Vasya cautiously let go of Morozko's hands. He did not immediately vanish, and so she slid down the white mare's shoulder.
"Thank you," Vasya said to the golden mare. "More
than I can say. Pojar flicked an ear, spun, and trotted off without another word. Vasya watched the mare go, a little forlorn, trying yet again not to think of Solovey. The campfire by the river glimmered bright in the darkness.
"Traveling by midnight is all very well," Vasya muttered, "but it involves far too much creeping up on folk in the dark. Who do you suppose that is?"
"I have no notion," said Morozko shortly. "I can't see." He said it matter-of-factly, but he looked shaken. In winter, his senses stretched far. They crept nearer and halted outside the firelight. A gray mare stood without hobbles on the other side of the flames. She raised her head uneasily, listening to the night. Vasya knew her.
"Tuman," she breathed, and then she saw three men camped beyond the mare, sleeping rough.
Three fine horses and a pack horse. One of the men was just a dark bundle wrapped in a cloak, but the others were sitting upright beside the fire, talking, despite the late hour. One was her brother. His face thinned with days of travel, raw with sunburn. There were threads of white in his hair. The other was the holiest man in Rus, Sergei Radonezhsky. Sasha's head came up, seeing the horses restless.
"Something in the wood," he said.
Vasya didn't know how a monk, even her brother, would react to her just then, drenched as she was in magic and darkness, hand fast with a frost demon. But she nerved herself and stepped forward. Sasha wrenched round, and Sergei rose to his feet, spry despite his years. The third man jerked upright, blinking. Vasya recognized him.
Rodion Ozlyablya,
a brother of the Trinity Lavra. Three monks, dirty from days on the road, camping in a clearing in the summer night, painfully ordinary. They made the winter midnights at her back feel like a dream. But it wasn't. She had brought the two worlds together. She didn't know what would happen. The first brother Alexander saw of his sister was a slim figure with a bruised face. He blasphemed in his mind. He sheathed his sword, offered up prayers, and ran to her. She was so thin. Every plane of her face was blade sharp, a skull picked out with firelight. But she returned his embrace with strength, and when he looked at her, he saw her lashes wet. Perhaps he was weeping too.
"Maria said you were alive. Vasya, I am sorry. Forgive me. I wanted to go find you. Varvara said you had gone beyond our reckoning, that you..."
She cut into this flow of words. "There is nothing to forgive. The fire." Her face hardened. "It is over, brother. Both fires. Where have you been? What happened to your face?" She touched the scar across her cheekbone. "This is from the night the mob came for me in Moscow." Sasha bit his lip. Father Sergei broke in, his voice sharp.
"There is a white horse there in the wood, and a shadow."
Sasha spun, his hand again going to the hilt of his sword. In the darkness, just touched by the edges of the firelight, stood a mare, white as the moon on a winter night.
"Yours?" Sasha said to his sister, and then he looked again.
Beside the mare, the shadow was watching them. Again, he put a hand to his sword hilt.
"No," said his sister. "You don't need it, Sasha."
The shadow, Sasha realized, was a man. A man whose eyes were two points of light, colorless as water.
Not a man. A monster.
He drew his sword. "Who are you?" Morozko made no answer, but Vasya could feel the anger in him. He and the monks were natural enemies. Catching her brother's eye, she saw with an unpleasant feeling that Sasha's fury wasn't just the impersonal disdain of a monk for a devil.
Vasya, do you know this creature?
Vasya opened her mouth, but Morozko stepped into the light and spoke first.
I marked her from her childhood, he said coolly, took her into my own house, bound her to me with ancient magic, and put her on the road to Moscow.
Vasya glared wordlessly at Morozko. Her brother's disdain was obviously not one-sided. Of all the things he might have said to Sasha first.
Vasya, Sasha said, whatever he has done to you.
Vasya cut him off. It doesn't matter. I have ridden across Rus dressed as a boy. I have walked alone into darkness and come out alive. It is too late for your scruples. Now, I am your brother, said Sasha. It concerns me. It concerns every man in our family that this...
You left us when I was a child, she interrupted. You have given yourself first to your religion and second to your grand prince. My life and my fate lie beyond your judgment.
Rodion broke in, bristling.
We are men of God, he said. That is a devil. Surely nothing more needs to be said.
I think, said Sergei, that a little more must be said. He did not speak loudly, but everyone turned to him.
My daughter, said Sergei calmly, we will hear your tale from the beginning.
They sat down around the fire. Rodion and Sasha did not sheathe their swords. Morozko did not sit at all. He paced, restless, as though he did not know which he disliked more, the monks and their hostile firelight, or the hot summer darkness. Vasya told the entire story, or the parts of it she could. She was hoarse by the end. Morozko did not speak. She got the impression that it was taking all his concentration not to disappear. Her touch might have helped, or her blood, but her brother kept a brooding eye on the frost demon, and she thought it better not to provoke him. She kept her arms around her knees. When her voice wound raggedly to a halt, Sergei said,
You have not told us everything.
No, said Vasya. There are things that have no words, but I have spoken the truth. Sergei was silent. Sasha's hand still toyed with the hilt of his sword. The fire was dying. Morozko seemed paradoxically more real in the faint red glow than he had in the full light of flames. Sasha and Rodion looked at him with open hostility. To Vasya, it seemed suddenly that her hope was a foolish one, that it was impossible that these two powers would make common cause. Trying to put all her conviction into her voice, she said,
There is evil walking free in Moscow. We must face it together or we will fall.
The monks were silent. Then slowly, Sergei said,
If there is an evil creature in Moscow, then what is to be done, my daughter?
Vasya felt a stir of hope. Rodion made a sound of protest, but Sergei raised a hand, silencing him.
The bear cannot be slain, said Vasya, but he can be bound.
She told them all she knew of the golden bridle.
We found it, said Sasha, breaking in unexpectedly, in the ruin of the burned stable the night of...
Yes, said Vasya swiftly, that night. Where is it now?
In Dmitri's treasure room, if he hasn't melted it for the gold, said Sasha. If you and Sergei tell him together what it is for, will he give it to you?
Sasha's mouth was open on what obviously was a yes. Then he frowned.
I don't know. I haven't. Dmitri doesn't trust me as he once did, but he has great faith in Father Sergei.
Vasya knew the admission hurt, and she also knew why Dmitri didn't trust her brother.
I am sorry, she said.
He shook his head once, but said nothing.
You cannot trust the Grand Prince's faith in anyone, Morozko broke in for the first time. Medved's great gift is disorder, and his tools are fear and mistrust. He will know that both of you are coming, and will have planned for it. Until he is bound, you cannot trust anyone. You cannot even trust yourselves, for he makes men mad." The monks exchanged glances. "Can the bridle be stolen?" Vasya asked. All the monks looked pious at that and did not answer. She wanted to pull her hair in exasperation. It took them a long time to lay their plans. By the time they had finished, Vasya was desperate to sleep, not just for rest, but because to sleep here in her own midnight meant that there would be light when she awakened. All that time they talked, she was still in midnight. They all were, caught fast in the darkness with her. She wondered if Sasha asked himself what had delayed the dawn. When she'd had enough, Vasya said, "We can speak again in the morning," got up and left the fire. She found a place thick with old pine needles and wrapped herself in her cloak. Morozko bowed to the monks. A faint mockery in the gesture brought angry color to Sasha's face. "Until morning," said the Winter King. "Where are you going?" Sasha demanded. Morozko said simply, "I am going down to the river. I have never seen dawn on moving water." And he vanished into the night. Sasha wanted to fling himself down in frustration and fear. He wanted to strike down that shadow creature. He wanted to rid his mind of the thought of it whispering in the dark to his maiden sister. He stared at the place where the demon had vanished, while Rodion watched him with concern and Sergei with understanding. "Sit down, my son," said Sergei. "It is not a time for anger." "Are we then to make a deal with a demon? It is sin. God will be angry," Sergei said reprovingly. "It is not for men and women to presume what the Lord wishes. That way lies evil, when men put themselves too high, saying, 'I know what God wants, for it is also what I want.' You may hate the one she calls the Winter King, for the way he looks at your sister. But he has not harmed her. She says he has saved her life. You could not do as much for her." That was severe, and Sasha flinched. "No," he said low, "I could not. But perhaps he has damned her." "I do not know," said Sergei. "We cannot know. But our business is with men and women, the helpless and the afraid. That is why we are going to Moscow." Sasha was silent a long time. Finally, wearily, he threw a log on the fire and said, "I do not like him." "I fear," said Sergei, "that he does not care in the slightest." Vasya woke in brilliant daylight. She leaped to her feet and lifted her face to the sun. Out of the country of midnight at last, and she hoped never to take that dark way again. For a moment, she enjoyed the warmth. Then the heat began to gather, inexorable. Sweat slid between her breasts and down her spine. She was still wearing the wool shirt from the house at the edge of the lake, though now she wished for linen. Her bare feet drank coolness from the dew-damp earth. Morozko was only a few paces off, grooming the white mare. She wondered if he'd kept near them that night, or if he'd gone wandering, touching the summer earth with strange frost. The monks still slept in the easy way men sleep in daylight in summer. Morozko's fur and embroidered silk was gone, as though he could not maintain the trappings of power in the harsh light of day. He might have been any peasant, feet bare in the grass, except his steps starred the earth with frost, and the cuffs of his shirt dripped cold water. A little coolness hung about him, even in the humid morning. She breathed it in, comforted, and said, "Mother of God, the heat." Morozko looked grim. "That is the bear's work." "In winter,"
I have often wished for mornings like this, Vasya said, to be fair, to be warm all the way through. She went over to stroke the white mare's neck, and in summer, I remember how suffocating such mornings are. Do you get hot? No, he said shortly, but the heat tries to unmake me. Remorseful, she put a hand on his where it moved on the mare's withers. The connection between them flared to life, and his outline looked a little less vague. His hand curled around hers. She shivered and he smiled, but his eyes were far away. He could not enjoy the reminder of his own weakness. She dropped her hand. Do you think the bear knows you're here? No, said Morozko. I will try to keep it that way. Best we take 2 days on the road and go into Moscow in bright morning. Because of the dead things, said Vasya. The upiri? His servants? They only walk at night, he said. His colorless eye was savage. Vasya bit her lip. An old war, Dyadgrib had called it. Had she made herself a third power in it, as the Chert suggested? Or merely taken the Winter King's side? The wall of years between them suddenly seemed as insurmountable as it had been before the night in the bathhouse. But she forced herself to say crisply, I imagine that by the end of the day, even my brother would sell his soul for cold water. Please do not bait him. I was angry, he said. We won't be traveling with them for long, she said. No, he returned. I will endure the summer as long as I can, but, Vasya, I cannot endure it forever. They ate nothing. It was too hot. All of them were flushed and sweating even before they started off. They took the narrow track that wound alongside the Moskva, approaching the city from the east. Vasya's stomach knotted with nerves. Now that they'd come to it, she did not want to go back to Moscow. She was deathly afraid. She trudged through the dust, trying to remember that she could do magic, that she had allies. But it was hard to believe. In the harsh light of day. Morozko had let the white mare go, to graze beside the river and keep out of the sight of men. He was staying out of sight himself, little more than a cool breeze ruffling the leaves. The sun rose higher and higher over the swooning world. Gray shadows lay like bars of iron along the trail. To their left ran the river. To their right was a vast wheat field, red gold as Pojar's coat, hissing as a hot wind flattened the stalks. The sun was like a mallet between the eyes. The path coated their feet with dust. On and on they walked, still passing the wheat. It seemed endless. It seemed... Suddenly Vasya halted, shading her eyes with a hand, and said, How large is this field? The men stopped when she did. Now they looked at each other. No one could tell. The hot day seemed interminable. Morozko was nowhere to be seen. Vasya peered out over the wheat field. A whirlwind of dust spun through the red-gold grass. The sky was dull with yellow haze, the sun overhead, still overhead. How long had it been overhead? Now that they'd stopped, Vasya saw that the monks were all flushed and breathing fast. Faster than before? Too fast? It was so hot. What is it? Asked Sasha, wiping the sweat from his face. Vasya pointed to the whirlwind. I think... Suddenly, with a muffled gasp, Sergei slumped over his horse's mane and toppled sideways. Sasha caught him. Sergei's placid horse didn't move, only tilted a puzzled ear. Sergei's skin was scarlet. He'd stopped sweating. Behind the monks, Vasya glimpsed a woman with fair skin and hair bleached white, raising a pair of cutting shears in one bone-colored hand. Not a woman. Without thinking, Vasya leaped, caught the Chert's wrist, forced it backward.
I have met Lady Midnight, said Vasya to her, not letting go, but not her sister, Poludnitsa, whose touch, they say, strikes men with heat sickness. Sasha was kneeling in the dust now, holding Sergei and looking stricken. Rodion had run for water. Vasya wasn't sure he'd find any. The wheat field at noon was the realm of midday, and they had stumbled into it. Let me go, hissed Poludnitsa. Vasya did not slack her grip. Let us go, she said. We have no quarrel with you. No quarrel? The chert's white hair snapped like straw in the sultry wind. Their bells will be the end of us. That is quarrel enough, don't you think? The bell makers wish only to live, said Vasya, as we all do. If they can only live by killing, snapped Lady Midday. Better they all die. Rodion came back without water. Sasha had risen to his feet, a hand on the searing hilt of his sword, but he couldn't see who Vasya was talking to. Vasya said to Midday, Their deaths are yours. Men and Cherti are bound together for good or ill, but it can be for good. We can share this world. To show her good intentions, Vasya reached out and bloodied her thumb on the shears. Behind her, she heard the monks gasp and realized that the touch of her blood had allowed them to see the demon. Midday laughed, shrill. Are you going to save us, little mortal child, when the bear has promised us war and victory? The bear is a liar, said Vasya. Just then Sergei's thready voice whispered behind her, Fear and flee, unclean and accursed spirit, visible through deceit, hidden by pretense, whether you be of the morning, noonday, midnight, or night, I expel you. Midday cried out, this time in real pain. She dropped her shears, fell back, vanishing. Vanishing. No, Vasya cried to the monks. It's not what you think. It's not what they think. She lunged and seized Midday's wrist, keeping her from disappearing utterly. I see you, she said to her low. Live on. Midday stood an instant, wounded, afraid, wondering. Then she was swept up in a whirlwind and vanished. Morozko stepped out of the noonday glare. Didn't your nurse warn you about wheat fields in summer? He asked. Father, Sasha cried, just as Vasya turned back to the monks. Sergei was breathing too fast. His pulse vibrated in his throat. Morozko might have hesitated, but, muttering something, he knelt in the dust, laid long fingers against the frantic pulse in the monk's neck. As he did, he breathed out, his other fist clenched hard. What are you doing? Sasha demanded. Wait, said Vasya. The wind rose, sluggishly at first, then faster, flattening the wheat. It was a cold wind, a wind of winter, pine-smelling, impossible in all the heat and the dust. Morozko's jaw was set. His outline grew fainter even as the wind grew stronger. In a moment he would disappear, his presence as unimaginable as a snowflake at high summer. Vasya caught him by the shoulders. Not yet, she said into his ear. He shot her a brief look and hung on. As the air cooled, Sergei's breathing and rabbit-fast pulse began to slow. Sasha and Rodion looked better, too. Vasya was drinking in the cold air with great gulps, but Morozko's outline was wavering badly now, despite her grip. Unexpectedly, Sasha asked, What can I do? Hope had won out over the censure on his face. She glanced at him in surprise and said, See him and remember. Morozko's lips thinned, but he said nothing. Sergei drew a deep breath. The air about them was cool enough to dry the sweat beneath Vasya's stifling shirt. The wind faded to a breeze. The sun had moved. The heat was still intense,
but not deadly. Morozko dropped his hand, bowed forward, gray as spring snow. Vasya kept her hands on his shoulders. Cold water ran down her fingers over his shoulders. All were silent. "I don't think we're going any farther for a while," Vasya said, looking from the frost demon to the sweat-stained monks. "No point in doing the bear's work for him and perishing before we get there." No one said anything to that. They found a little hollow of the river, cool with grass and moving water. The river rolled brown at their feet, running fast toward Moscow, where the Moskva and the Neglinaya joined. In the distance, thick with haze, they could see the sullen city itself. A little way beyond them, the river was full of boats. It was too hot to eat, but Vasya took a little bread from her brother and sprinkled crumbs in the water. She thought she caught a flash of bulging fish eyes, a ripple that was not part of the current, but that was all. Sasha, watching her, said abruptly, "Mother, Mother put bread in the water too sometimes, for the river king," she said. Then he shut his lips tight, but to Vasya it sounded like understanding. It sounded like apology. She smiled tentatively at him.
"The demon meant to kill us," said Sergei,
his voice still hoarse. "She was afraid," said Vasya. "They are all afraid. They do not want to disappear. I think the bear is making them more afraid, and so they lash out. It wasn't her fault. Father, exorcisms will only drive more of them to the bear's side."
"Perhaps," said Sergei, "but I did not wish to die in a wheat field."
"You didn't," said Vasya, "because the Winter King saved your life." No one said anything. She left them in the shade, rose and went downstream, out of earshot. She sank down in the tall grasses, dabbled her feet in the water and said aloud, "Are you all right?" Silence. Then his voice spoke in the summertime stillness.
"I have been better."
He stepped soundlessly through the grass and sank to the earth beside her. It was somehow harder to look at him now, as the eye slides, without comprehension over any impossible thing. She narrowed her eyes and kept looking until the feeling passed. He sat with his knees drawn up, staring out at the glaring bright water. Sourly, he said,
"Why should my brother fear my freedom? I am less than a ghost."
"Does he know now?"
"Yes," said Morozko. "How could he not? Calling the winter wind, so I could not have made clearer sign of my presence short of shouting it to his face.
If we still mean to go to Moscow, we will have to go today, despite the risk of sunset. I had hoped to avoid night and the Upiri both. But if he is going to send his servants to try to kill you anyway, better we have the bridal first." Vasya shivered in the midday sun. Then she told him, "There is a reason Cherti, like Lady Midday, are on the bear side."
"Many, perhaps. Not most,"
Morozko returned.
"Cherti don't want to disappear, but most of us know what folly it is. To go to war with men, our fates are bound together."
She said nothing.
"Vasya, how close did my brother come to persuading you to join him?"
"He didn't come close," she said. Morozko raised a brow. Lower, she added,
"I thought about it. He asked me what loyalty I could have to Rus. The mob of Moscow killed my horse." "You freed Pozhar, who set fire to Moscow," Morozko said.
He was looking out at the water again.
"You caused the death of your sister's infant, though she was ready to die to give the babe life. Perhaps you only paid for your foolishness."
His tone was wounding, the words sword sharp in their suddenness. Startled, she said,
I did not mean.
You came into the city like a bird in the cage of reeds, battering yourself against the bars and breaking them. Do you wonder that it ended as it did?
Where should I have gone? She snapped. Home, to be burned as a witch? Should I have heeded you, worn your charm, married, had children, and sat sometimes by the window, fondly remembering my days with the Winter King? Should I have let...
You should think before you do things.
He bit off the words as though her last question had stung.
This from the frost demon who set this whole realm at hazard to save my life?
He said nothing. She swallowed more hot words. She did not understand what lay between them. She was neither wise nor beautiful. None of the tales spoke of both wanting and resentment, of grand gestures and terrible mistakes.
The Cherti would be worshipped, said Vasya, moderating her tone.
If the bear had his way, he would be worshipped if he had his way, said Morozko. I do not think he cares what happens to Cherti, so long as they serve his ends.
He paused.
Or what happens to men and women themselves, dead in his scheming.
If I wished to throw my lot in with the bear, I would not have come to find you in the first place, Vasya said. But yes, sometimes I think it is a bitter thing to go back and try to save that city.
If you spend all your days bearing the burden of unforgotten wrongs, you will only wound yourself.
She glared at him and he looked back, narrow-eyed. Why was he angry? Why was she?
Vasya knew about marriages, carefully arranged. She knew about swains, courting yellow-haired peasant girls in the midsummer twilight. She had listened to fairy tales since before she could speak. None of those prepared her for this. She had to clench her hands into fists to keep from touching him. He drew away, jerkily, just as she took a deep, shaken breath and turned her gaze again to the water.
I am going to go to sleep in the sunshine, she said, until Father Sergei is ready to go on. Will you disappear if I do?
No, he said, and he sounded as if he resented it. But she was hot and sleepy and could not bring herself to care. She curled up in the grass near him. The last thing she felt was his light, cold fingers in her hair, like an apology, as she fell suddenly and completely asleep. Sasha found them a little while later. The frost demon sat upright, watchful. The slanting summer light seemed to shine through him. He raised his head as Sasha approached, and Sasha was startled at the look on his face at that moment, unguarded, there and gone. Vasya stirred.
Let her sleep, Winter King, said Sasha.
Morozko said nothing, but one hand moved to smooth Vasya's tousled black hair.
Watching them, Sasha said,
Why did you save Father Sergei's life?
Morozko said,
I am not noble, if that is what you are thinking. The bear must be bound anew, and we cannot do it alone.
Sasha was silent, turning that over. Then he said abruptly,
You are not a creature of God.
I am not.
His free hand, lying loose, had an unnatural stillness.
Yet you saved my sister's life. Why?
The devil's gaze was direct.
First for my own scheming, but later because I could not stand to see her slain.
Why do you ride with her now? It cannot be easy, a frost demon at high summer.
She asked it of me. Why all these questions, Alexander Peresviet?
The epithet was given half in earnest, half in mockery. Sasha had to swallow a surge of rage.
Because after Moscow, he said, trying to keep his voice even, she went to a dark country. I was told I could not follow her there.
You could not. And you could.
Yes.
Sasha took this in.
If she goes into the darkness again, will you swear not to abandon her?
If the demon was surprised, he gave no sign. His face remote, he said, "I will not abandon her, but one day she will go where even I cannot follow. I am immortal. Then, if she asks, if there is a man who can warm her and pray for her and give her children, then let her go. Do not keep her in the dark." "You ought to make up your mind," said Morozko. "Swear not to abandon her or give her up to a living man. Which shall it be?" His tone was cutting. Sasha's hand strayed to his sword, but he did not grasp it. "I don't know," he said. "I never protected her before. I do not know why I should be able to now." The demon said nothing. Sasha said, "A convent would have broken her." Reluctantly, he added, "Even a marriage, no matter how kindly the man, how fair the house." Still, Morozko did not speak. "But I am afraid for her soul," said Sasha, voice rising despite himself. "I am afraid for her alone in dark places, and I am afraid for her with you at her side. It is sin, and you are a fairy tale, a nightmare. You have no soul at all." "Perhaps not," agreed the Winter King, but still the slender fingers tangled with Vasya's hair. Sasha ground his teeth. He wanted to demand promises, pledges, confessions, if only to delay the realization that there were some things he couldn't change. But he bit back the words. He knew they wouldn't do any good. She had survived the frost and the flame, had found a harbor, however brief. Perhaps that was all anyone could ask in the world's savage turning. He stepped back. "I will pray for you both," he said, voice clipped. "We are going soon." Chapter 21. Enemy at the Gate. It was early evening, bright and still, the gray shadows long and softening to violet, by the time they made their way down the parched bank of the Moskva and found a ferry to take them across. The ferryman only had eyes for the monks. Vasya kept her head down. With her cropped hair, her rough clothes, her gawkiness, she passed for a horseboy. At first, it was easy to forget where she was, as she busied herself getting the horses to stand quiet in the rocking boat. But she found her heart beating faster and faster and faster as they approached the far side of the river. In her mind's eye, the Moskva was sheeted with ice, red with firelight. Men and women seethed around a hastily built pyre. Perhaps even now they were floating over the very spot where the last ashes of her would have sunk into the indifferent water. She barely made it to the side of the boat, and then she was heaving into the river. The ferryman laughed.
"Poor country boy, never been on the boat before."
Father Sergei, with kindly hands, held her head as she retched.
"Look at the shore," he said. "See how still it is? Here's some clean water. Drink. That's better."
It was the icy touch on the back of her neck, cold, invisible fingers that drew her back to herself.
"You are not alone," he said, in a voice no one but she could hear. "Remember."
She sat up, grim-faced, and wiped her mouth.
"I'm all right, Father," she said to Sergei.
The boat ground against a dock. Vasya took hold of the pack horse's halter, led him ashore. The rope slid against her sweating hands. People were pushing to get into the city before the gates were shut for the night. It was not difficult to fall a little behind the three monks. Morozko's cold presence paced invisibly beside her, waiting. Would anyone recognize her? The witch they thought they'd burned? There were people in front and behind, people all around. She was afraid. The air smelled of dust and rotten fish and sickness. Sweat trickled between her breasts. She kept her head down, trying to look insignificant, trying to control her racing heart. The stink of the city was calling up memories faster than she could push them back, of fire, of terror, of hands tearing at her clothes. She prayed no one would wonder why she wore a thick shirt and jacket in the heat. She had never in her life felt so hideously vulnerable. The three monks were stopped at the gate. The gate guards held sachets of dried herbs to mouth and nose as they prodded carts and asked questions of travelers. The river darted points of light into their eyes.
"Say your name and your business, strangers," said the captain of the guard. "I am no stranger. I am Brother Alexander," said Sasha. "I have returned to Dmitry Ivanovich, accompanying the Holy Father, Sergei Radonezhsky."
The captain scowled.
"The Grand Prince ordered you brought to him when you arrived."
Vasya bit her lip. Smoothly, Sasha said, "I will go to the Grand Prince in due course, but the Holy Father must go first to the monastery to rest and say prayers of thanks for his safe arrival." Vasya's hands were slippery on the lead rope of the horse.
"The Holy Father may go where he chooses," said the captain flatly. "But to the Grand Prince, you will go, according to orders. I will have men escort you. The Grand Prince has taken advice, and he does not trust you."
"Who has advised him?"
Sasha demanded.
"The wonder worker," said the gate guard,
and a little emotion entered his flat voice.
"Father Konstantin Nikonovich."
"There knows we are coming now,"
Morozko had said to Sergei and Sasha as they made their way along the Moskva toward the city in the sweltering afternoon.
"It is possible you will be delayed at the gate. If so..."
Vasya could scarcely breathe around the panic in her throat, but she managed to mutter to the packhorse at her side,
"Rear!"
The creature broke into a frenzy of heavy-limbed bucking. Next moment, Sasha's battle-trained Tuman reared up as well, lashing out with her forehooves. Rodion's horse, too, began capering heavily, right at the gate, and then Sergei raised his voice, rich and full despite his age, to say,
"Come, brother, let us all pray,"
just as Tuman kicked one of the guards. When the confusion was at its height, Vasya slipped through the gate, Morozko in her wake.
Forget.
Just like that other night on this same river. Forget that they could see her. Of course, the guards might not have seen her even without magic. So effectively had the three monks drawn all eyes. She waited in the shadow of the gate, waited for Sasha to come through with Sergei, so that she could follow them, invisibly, to the Grand Prince's palace, be let in with them, unseen, then go and steal the bridle.
"Am I an utter fool, brother?"
asked a familiar voice. Somewhere in its light tones was the clashing of armies, the screaming of men. The bear stood in the shadow of the gate and seemed to have grown since the last time she saw him, as though nourished by the miasma of fear and sickness swirling about Moscow.
"The city is mine," he said. "What do you expect to do, coming here like a ghost in the company of a pack of monks? Betray me to the new religion? See me exorcised? No, I am stronger. You won't have a pleasant prison of forgetfulness this time. It will be chains and long darkness. After I kill her and make her my servant in front of you."
Morozko didn't speak. He had a knife of ice, though the blade dripped water when it moved. His eyes met hers once, wordless. She ran.
"Witch!"
shouted the bear in the voice that men could hear.
"Witch! There is a witch there!"
Heads began to turn. Then his voice was cut off abruptly. Morozko had flung his knife at his brother's throat. The bear had slammed it aside, and then the two were grappling like wolves, invisible in the dust. Vasya fled, heart hammering in her throat, effacing herself in the shadow of buildings. She tried not to think of what was happening behind her. Sasha and Sergei set to distract Dmitri, Morozko holding off the bear. The rest was up to her.
If it comes to it, I cannot keep him distracted forever, Morosko had said, until sunset, not longer. And by sunset it won't matter. He will have the dead. He will have the power of men's fears that rise in the dark. He must be bound by sunset, Vasya.
So she ran now, the sweat smarting in her eyes. The gazes of Cherti fell on her like a hail of stones, but she did not turn to see. People went heavily about their business, gasping and sweat-soaked, holding sachets of dried flowers to ward off sickness, paying little heed to a single gawky boy. A dead man lay huddled in a corner between two buildings, flies in his open eyes. Vasya swallowed nausea and ran on. With every step she had to fight down panic at being in Moscow again, and alone. Every sound, every smell, every turn of the streets brought back paralyzing memories. She felt like a girl in a nightmare, trying to run through clinging mud. The gates of the palace of Sierpukhov had been reinforced and reinforced again. Spikes of wood lined the top, and there were guards on the gate. She paused, still fighting that stomach-clenching dread, wondering how she was going to. A voice spoke from the wall top. She had to look three times before she saw the speaker. It was Olga's Dvorovoy. He reached his two hands down to her.
Come, he whispered. Hurry, hurry.
When she caught the outstretched hands of the Dvorovoy, she found them strangely solid. Olga's house spirits had been little more than mist before, but now the Chert's hands pulled strongly. Vasya scrabbled for purchase, got a hand up to the top of the wall, and pulled herself over. She dropped to the ground on the other side and found a brassy, silent dooryard with only a few servants moving slowly. She breathed, groped for the forgetfulness that kept them from seeing her. She could barely manage it. Just there, Soloveï had...
I must speak to Varvara, Vasya said to the Dvorovoy between clenched teeth.
But the Dvorovoy had her by the hand and was hustling her in the direction of the bathhouse.
You must see Our Lady, he said.
She was lying curled like a puppy in the bathhouse. It was not too hot inside. The Banik must be doing what he could for her, Vasya thought. All the house Cherti must be doing what they could for her, because she... Maria sat up. And Vasya was shocked when she saw the child's face, her eyes set about with rings like bruising.
Aunt! Maria cried. Aunt Vasya!
And she hurled herself sobbing into Vasya's arms. Vasya caught the child and held her.
Masha, love, tell me what has happened.
Muffled explanations sounded from somewhere around Vasya's breastbone.
You were gone, and Soloveï was gone, and the man in the oven said the ether would send dead people into our houses if he could. So I talked to the Cherti, and I gave them bread, and I cut my hand, and gave them blood like you said, and Mother kept us all home from church.
Yes, Vasya said with pride, cutting into the flow of words.
You did so well, my brave girl.
Maria straightened abruptly.
I am going to get Mother and Varvara.
That is a good idea, said Vasya, mindful of the waning day. She didn't like the idea of skulking in the bathhouse while Maria played messenger. But she dared not allow the servants to see her, and she was not enough in control of herself to rely on half-understood magic. Terror was still waiting to snatch her by the throat.
The Cherti said you'd come back, Maria said happily. They said you'd come, and we go to a place by the lake where it's not hot and there are horses.
I hope so, said Vasya fervently. Now hurry, Masha. Maria ran off. When she had gone, Vasya took a few deep breaths, fighting to compose herself. She turned her head to the Banik.
I have wept for a nightingale, she said. But Maria... Is your heir and your mirror, returned the Banik. She will have a horse, and they will love each other as the left hand loves the right. She will ride far and fast when she is grown. He paused. If you and she survive.
It is a good future, said Vasya, and then bit her lip, remembering.
The bear scorns the house, Cherti, as tools of men, said the Banig. We will help you as we can. His votary is afraid of us.